Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. Then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me. And walk this lovely land with me. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Oh, singing Andy Williams. I hope we have Andy Williams' voice in eternity, but I rather doubt that is going to be the case. How are you, fellas? Welcome to Yada Yada Radio.
Good.
It's good. It's nice not to be on a cell phone driving through the hinterlands of Indiana as I try to do this. You know, the thing that was comforting, there were two things really comforting about the whole thing. One is that you guys got the show up and going and contributed mightily to it. So it's there's nothing really better than being able to participate in something where you're not needed. If you're really needed, then, you know, it's kind of more of a burden. And if you're not needed but get to participate, then it's just fun. So I really enjoyed that part of it. And the thing was also interesting. You know, after a while, you just come to know the material inside out and then in between. And now it's true, we have spent 3.5 shows on Barbershop 1317, which is the, you know, choose of your own free will to stand up, electing independently on your own initiative to take a walk through the land and to be prolonged in life for the purpose of continuing to grow in a manner that is fitting, to be of an agreeable nature and to observe the expanse and the greatness of this dwelling, the immensity of the spatial dimensions, which are implied but difficult to understand so as to grow, resulting in a vastly more favorable circumstance with unbounded opportunities because of your approach because I'm doing this on your behalf, giving it all of these things to you forever. Now, that's a passage we've spent 4 programs on. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to it. But here, you know, I was driving with in a car with, I don't know, 3 or 4 people all sit in the car, and they're all listening because I put it on speakerphone because otherwise it's really awkward when they only hear one voice. And, you know, nothing to look at, so you're doing everything by memory. And after a while, the material just becomes part of who you are. And so the deeper that you guys were digging the nuances of the words, I felt kind of neat to be able to contribute without having anything but the kind of reflection and understanding of those powerful thoughts in that statement. And it's really one of the most important statements relative to the covenant because it talks about this walk is independently of our own initiative and apart from outside influences, because all of the outside influences point in a different direction. So it's fun to be
part of that. Everything you just said destroys Christianity. It is not a program for Christianity.
I mean, no, it is not.
1,000 hours of sermons next Sunday or last Sunday between the shows would cover everything but what you just said.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Old Billy Graham kicked the bucket at 99 years old. He was looking bad, too, I will tell you that. But Oh, Billy Graham kicked the bucket at 99 years old, and can you imagine now? You know, he's laying in state because he was equal parts political figure as he was religious figure.
Yeah.
And, oh, he's a big-time operator. Can you imagine how he's feeling about all these things right now? He is not having a very good time. He is not the big guy up there in front of on the big podium with all the TV cameras and 100,000 people on the stand.
No.
Right now, he is sort of wishing, you know, maybe I ought not have done that. Yeah, so this is not a good time to be the likes of Billy Graham. Well, Franklin Graham, I'm sure, is reveling in having had Daddy and Elaine in state in the U.S. Rotunda. But it's not good where he is. All right, I want to start with 15-1. We began 15-1 at the end of the program, Kirk, during Observations for Our Time. And for those that don't know, on Monday, we recorded the last Observations for Our Time that was for this Friday's program because our producer, Scott, is driving today down to Austin. He is he's taking a new job. And that once he is established there, he's going to see if he can arrange the same kind of recording capability that we had. If he can't, we'll incorporate Observations into BTR and just do a second program under BTR. But hopefully Scott can, and we'd rather do it with him than apart from him. So,
he is in for culture shock and weather shock going from where from St. Paul to
Austin. Yeah, you know, he's going from Genesis Communication Network, which is based on Alex Jones. I mean, they have over when I joined them, I think they
Alex Jones Network.
like 12 hosts, and Alex Jones was the lead dog of the pack. And now they have like 100 hosts. And Alex Jones is the lead dog in the pack. And he's going to work directly for Alex Jones. He's had actually a very significant influence on Alex Jones. So that part will be good for the broadcast of Alex Jones. And Alex Jones has been very good to Scott. So we wish him all the best. He is a wonderful guy. And weather-wise, Austin beats the living tar out of Minnesota, where they have two seasons. They have winter and road repair. And so he will like that because I think they also have
winter.
Yeah,
but he's
going to
talk for those 110, 115 degree summers.
You know, it wasn't so much the 115 degree temperature with 100% humidity that bothered me all the time that I spent in Waco, Texas. It was actually when at 10 o'clock at night, it was still 110 degrees.
Yeah.
There's just something wrong with 110 degrees.
And walk outside at night and you're sweating.
Oh, you know, we used to have a home in the desert outside of Los Angeles when I lived there. And, you know, it would in the summer, and no one goes there in the summer, but it would get to 120 in the sun in the summertime. But at night it would cool down into the 70s.
You know? Yeah.
It doesn't do that in Texas. And when it was 120, the humidity would be 25%. You know, 110 with 100% humidity is an entirely different animal than 110 to 120 with 20% humidity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Texas summer.
Yeah, that's going to be an entirely different thing. Although, you know, I think Austin is actually a beautiful city. I'm not crazy about the state of Texas. It's way too religious and too political and too militaristic for me. But, you know, there's a lot of nice people there, and Austin is probably the queen city of Texas, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful city. Lots of stuff to do. Great place.
Yeah, so he'll be doing that. So anyway, we'll find out when we're going to be able to record Observations. We're going to give Scott some time to get settled, see if he can do it. If he can't do it, we'll include it in Blog Talk Radio. But there won't be any new additions to Observations until that is resolved. And we'll just continue with the Blog Talk Radio Torah broadcast program at its regular time. I just want to reemphasize something that I said on the Observation show that I've got a lot going on at the moment. I think you know that I was able to avoid knee surgery by changing my exercise and diet routine so that I'm exercising 3 hours a day and working on a really rigorous diet to lose additional weight to really minimize the likelihood that I'll have to have surgery. It was postponed the evening before the surgery was to take place. And for the most part, I've had really good results on a strenuous exercise and stretching regime that has precluded me doing something that was going to be 12 weeks of recovery. And I just didn't want to devote that much time to it. There's other things that I'm trying to get done at the moment that are it's just taking a lot of time. And also my son and his wife recently sold a house. They bought a new house. And doing that, I'm spending a lot more time with my granddaughter. And I'm also trying to sell my farm in Virginia. I'm spending a considerable amount of time trying to get it ready for sale. So I've got my plate full. If I have not answered your email, that's the reason why I'm way, way behind, and particularly on the long emails. The short ones, no big deal, but on the long ones.
You get those two-page emails.
Oh, gosh. Sometimes they send me 5- and 6-page emails. You know, you don't want to shortchange them, but they're just right now there's not time to do them justice. My overall plan is that I'm going to continue to edit Volume 1 and Volume 2. I think Volume 1 has been edited and is ready to be printed, both at Clariter's and at Amazon. It'll be ready for sale shortly. And Volume 2 has mostly been edited, but I've got 3 chapters still to write. And that's going to take another few months before the Volume 2 is done. And once Volume 2 is done, I'm going to really take a little bit of a reflection. I'm spending a lot of time, usually 2 days a week right now, flying charity missions. You know, it's just every once in a while you just get the itch. You've just got to do something a little bit different. Right now, the thing that I'm doing different is I'm flying children that are really sick from their homes to leading hospitals, and then dropping them off, and then arranging to take them back. And so I'm devoting a better part of 2 days a week to flying charity. It's just something that I can do. It's very rewarding, and you know, quite frankly, I just needed some of the, you know, it's just a feeling that goes along, a sense of fulfillment that goes along with helping people in this way. And I understand that if I'm writing and sharing Yah's word, there are far more people that can be positively influenced than one family with one child. But you know, I've heard of this a lot in the past, that when we look at tragedy, for example, if one person is killed and you have all the details, it has far more impact than 1,000 people dying that you don't know how they died and you have no connection to them. Now, the same thing is true with positive kind of input like this. You know, one child and that gets to sit up in front of the cockpit of your airplane, and you give him things to draw on, and you let him hold the yoke of the airplane, and you talk to the air traffic controllers and let them talk to the child and make him feel like he is the most important person in the world during that day. There's something immensely gratifying and rewarding about that. And yeah. We all have to have our batteries charged, and that's what I'm doing right now to charge mine.
Well, you get to do something you love, and you get to help people at the same time.
That's wonderful. Yeah, it's wonderful. And, you know, the nice thing about working with Yahweh is he is not a slave driver. He is just, you know, he expects us to take breaks. You know, it's, you know, you look at Dode, for example. He took a good long break. And I didn't have any problem with him. So with doing that, that's kind of what I'm doing. I'm working a third time right at the moment. But, you know, there was a while there, guys, where I was adding a new chapter like every 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So
I couldn't keep up with them.
Yeah.
No, I think there are a few I still haven't had a chance to read.
So anyway, that's what I'm doing. I just wanted to explain it so no one's mad at me for not being expeditious on emails. It has nothing to do with the individual. Still interested in all of them. I just can't do everything at the same time and recharge the old batteries. All right, I want to start with 15-1. Kirk, we began this during observations, but it reads, after these conversations, the word of Yahweh came to exist as God unto Abram in the form of a personal, visual, and illuminating manifestation which could be seen and experienced.
Sure.
To say, do not be awed, Abram. On your behalf, and for you to draw near, I am your defender, surrounding you, shielding and delivering you from harm. Your exceedingly great reward. We spent some time on the first sentence. The first sentence is as profound as anything you're ever going to read. The first sentence is explains that there was no need for and no credibility in a Christian New Testament. First, God's name is Yahweh, not Jesus, not Christ, not Lord. Second, if you want to see Yahweh, he is known by his word. Yahweh's word is comprised of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, which he inspired in Hebrew. It is not comprised of the Christian New Testament. It is not communicated in Greek. He did not communicate in English. So, after these conversations, that's at the bottom, after these statements, these discussions, the word, Dabar, of Yahweh. You know, so many people think the opening of Yahochanan is profound because, you know, the word became flesh and dwelt among us. What do you think this says, folks? I mean, this was written 700 years before that occurred. This says, after these conversations, the word of Yahweh came to exist as God unto Abraham, or Abram in this case. He would become Abraham later. You know, there is nothing new. In the parts of the so-called Christian New Testament that are accurate are all presentations of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. They're all cited there. There's nothing new in it. And the word of Yahweh does not include the Christian New Testament. So here's the word of Yahweh coming to exist as God unto Abram. So today, remember, the only reason the story is being told to us is for our benefit. This story being recorded by Moshe in the Torah had absolutely no merit whatsoever to Abraham. By the time it was recorded, Abraham had been gone for 4 centuries. It's for us. And so if we want to see Yahweh, where should we look?
At the Torah.
Torah, right. At his words in the Torah. And there he is. And that's why Hebrew is so important. Because he is eternal. Hebrew is eternal. No past, present, and future tense. It's important because Hebrew is an entirely relational language. All the stems speak of relationships. It is a volitional presentation based entirely on free will. That's why the moods are all based all free will. And the alphabet comprising these words is all pictographical. So it is visual, so that you can see precisely in the letters exactly what God is trying to convey. Very important. And it's the word of Yahweh, not the word of God, not the word of the Lord, not the word of Allah, not the word of Jesus. The word of Yahweh. If you do not know his name, you do not know him. That simple.
That's you.
Right. And he does not know you if you do not know his name. His name is essential. If you negate the value of his name, all of these moron Christians, that doesn't care. He doesn't care what you call him so long as you call him. He absolutely cares what you call him. And he doesn't even want you to call him unless you know him.
Well, what about to him? Prayer?
Pardon?
What about all that unceasing prayer they're supposed to do?
Yeah, pray without ceasing. That is Paul, and that's what he wants you to do, because he wants you to pray to his Lord, which is Satan. And of course, Yahweh never once asks you to pray. Never once. Not a single time, much less without ceasing. Never once even mentions it.
Yeah, that's profound.
Now, Satan is the insecure one who wants you praising him day and night, telling him how great he is.
Right.
Yahweh tells him how great he is. He knows.
Yeah. Well, beyond that, to tell the creator that he's wonderful, to praise him, is absolutely obnoxious. It is in essence saying that he would be revoltingly insecure. So, no, Yahweh is not interested in that in the least. The first thing that he tells Abraham here, and again, he appeared as a personal, visual, and illuminating manifestation which could be seen and experienced. The word here, Meshechus, is a revelation of enlightening communication, which can be beheld and visualized, which means he appeared essentially as light. He flooded the area with light. And that's important, because had he appeared as an average fellow, then there would be no reason for him to say, hey, don't be odd.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about that before. JV, we've met before. You're a hell of a nice guy, but you know, when I walked up and said hello to you, the next words out of my mouth were, hey, don't be odd. Don't be afraid. You know, if you're approaching somebody as just another, you know, individual, you would never say that. So there was something about Yahweh's presence, and the word here, conveys that.
Mm-hmm.
He was glowing. He appeared as light. And so, you know, that could be frightening. All of a sudden, you know, this is your next conversation with God, and he appears as light. Yeah, I might say, okay, you know, I need to be respectful. I should be awed. This is the creator of the universe. I hope he likes me.
Mm-hmm.
But the first words out of his mouth is, don't be afraid.
Yeah.
Don't be awed. Stay calm. And that's important to understand, because if anyone wanted to instill fear, a sense of awe, God would be entitled to it. His seven-dimensional construct, he created the universe, conceived life. He's the only individual in the universe that could actually be all-imposing if he wished to be, without it being inappropriate. But it isn't in his nature.
It would change the relationship as well.
Totally.
You can't
affect the relationship.
That's the type of relationship he's looking for, yeah.
The kind of relationship he has envisioned, the kind of relationship he's offering, cannot in any way, shape, or form be conducted under the auspices of fear. If you are afraid, if you are awed, then you cannot engage in a family relationship with the Creator as your Father. You can't love that which you fear. You can't embrace and engage in a relationship with someone with whom you're afraid. So the very first thing he said is the antithesis of religion. You know, most religious people will tell you the single most important thing is to have a fear of God.
Fear of the Lord.
Fear of the Lord. Yeah, fear of the Lord is the single most important step in having any relationship with the God. Fear of the Lord. How could you be so wrong? But nonetheless, that is their view. God's view is the antithesis. Then God says, after he says, you know, don't worship me. Don't feel any anxiety. Don't be frightened. Don't be intimidated. He says, on your behalf and for you to draw near, that's law, I am your defender, surrounding you, shielding and delivering you from harm. Megan, I'm a protective covering from Ganon to defend and protect by surrounding and covering. Now, that's a rather important concept, and it is insightful in the sense that our protection is through the set apart spirit, and she covers us in a garment of light. So God is saying, I want to surround you, I'm going to shield you, I'm going to deliver you from harm. Well, the way that he does that is by covering us in this garment of light. Now you've got to put things together, make the necessary connections to come to that conclusion, but that is certainly what Gannon is affirming. Mm-hmm. Now that's rather important, because rather than God being the vengeful God who is constantly judging and condemning people, as presented by Pauline Christians, he said, no, I'm your defender. I'm not the prosecutor here. I'm not the judge for you if you want to be part of the covenant. I'm your defense attorney. I'm your defender. Not only am I your defender, I'm your protective force. You don't need a security detail if you're with me. I'm your defender. I am the one who's going to keep you safe from harm. That's pretty cool.
Don't take him over Blackwater any day.
You know, I would take him over every army that ever marched.
Yeah.
Every security deal that has ever existed, if you were to put them all together, they aren't even one gazillionth as effective as Yahweh. You're exceedingly, this is ma'od. Ma'od means enormous, empowering, energizing, facilitating, abundant. It's just the, if in English you were to have a word for very, 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 mm-hmm. That would be ma'od. Great. Great is arbeh. H-A-R-B-E-H, arbeh. Increasingly and uplifting. Multiplicitous. Shakar, reward. Payment for passage. Transit fee paid by a servant or shepherd. Fare provided by a generous father. Reliable bookkeeper or doorkeeper. Compensation and recompense from one devoted to serving. That's one of the words to shakar. If you didn't bother to look it up, you just say, okay, I'm your reward. Well, great. You know, you go to the dentist and you get a lollipop. That's your reward. You know, your little kid, and you let them cut your hair without crying, they give you a piece of bubble gum. Oh, boy. Well, he's very explicit. He used a word for reward that says, okay, what am I giving you? Well, the reward is payment for passage. Passage where? Mortal
through
to immortality, through the doorway of his
that's
own.
That's why you got to turn the doorway.
And oh, by the way, that doorway doesn't come free.
Somebody has to pay a price.
Somebody has to pay a price. There's a tariff. He's saying, I'm going to pay the price. And I'm going to pay the price as your servant. And I'm going to lead the way as your shepherd. And I'm going to do so as a generous father. And then I'm going to hold the door open for you. Because I'm devoted to serving you.
You know,
well, that's quite a word.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I found in the word shakar, and another one I found it to hire oneself out. And I thought about how marvelous that is, because we're talking about Yahweh hiring himself out to do the work. I mean, it's him. It's Yahweh. It's not Jesus dying on the cross.
No.
He's doing all the work. He's hired him on. He's enabling everything. These words are so deep. I mean, you just keep digging and digging and digging, and every little thing, you have so many dots to connect. It's just, you can't miss the point.
Yeah, the thing, though, that about shakar, though, is, you know, some words you really have to dig. All words you gain by digging.
Yes.
Shakar is in your face.
Yeah.
I mean, it's right there. Yeah. That word is one of those words that to miss it, you aren't even trying.
Yeah.
Now, when you dig, as you did, you find out even more. You're always rewarded for the extra effort. But this is one of the words that the only way to leave it as your reward and say nothing about it is not to try. Because I don't think there's any dispute with the word means.
No.
Payment for passage, transit fee paid by a servant or shepherd, fare provided by a generous father, a reliable doorkeeper, compensation and recompense to deliver and because you're devoted to serving. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Now, you checked out some of the other words, too, Kirk. What'd you find?
Well, harvest, I was trying real hard to find that one, and obviously it's great. And it had a number, 7235 in Strong's. And every time I'd click on it, it would go Rabbah for Rabbi. Usually we do that as exalted ones. And so Arbeth, I looked up that one, and it's Arbeth, and it became a swarming locust. And I said, okay, that's fine. That's, you know, what else, if there's anything? And then I looked at the letters for both. And Rabbi is, of course, a Rosh and a Beth and a Hey, Rabbah. And the if you add a Aleph on top, in front of it, rather, on the right-hand side, going from right to left, you have Arbeth. And what I was telling you a little earlier, it became Rabbi without a Yah, because the symbol of Aleph in this context is usually Yahweh. He's the head shepherd, or the head steep in thought for the
right.
So you take the, when you don't have the A, then you have a Rabbi, which is a self greatness. And if you have, if you add Yahweh to you, then of course you are real great. So then you become great. So and he is great. Any way you look at it, it's just they're just fun to look through these things. I mean, the overall picture was he's saving us from darkness. Because you get to go through the door, at least to enlightenment, to light, where Yahweh is.
And I love the idea that he is delivering us by paying for our passage, but providing a recompense as a shepherd, as a servant, and as a generous father for us to transition from flawed and mortal to perfected and immortal.
And none of that can
describe from darkness to light. And that's what he's delivering us from and to.
Yes.
The whole equation is right here.
Yeah. Look how much
it's all laid out. All you have to do is think of the, you know, study the words, and it's all laid out on our behalf.
Amazing stuff.
Then 15:2. Barishith in the beginning, 52. But Abram. before I read this, I've said this before, and I'm sure that there's a lot of people that that think I'm being unfair and that you should never speak of someone that is as important as Abraham is in the top five most important people in the history of humankind. So when I say something that sounds like I'm besmirching him, that may strike a lot of people as, what right do you have to say that? I'm just going to share my thoughts on it. I don't think Abraham is the sharpest kid. Well, he wasn't a kid. He was 80 years old at the time. I don't think Abraham is the sharpest guy who ever lived. I am not impressed by Abram's intellect. Now, I may, that may be unfair, because, you know, I'm looking at Abram, and he is meeting directly and having a conversation directly with the Creator God of the universe. But I'm just not impressed with the way he responded. And again, we have a different view. I can sit here in my chair in front of my computer and look at every word. I've got all these marvelous tools, and I can ponder it, and I can analyze Yahweh's conversation with Abram 50 different times from 50 different perspectives. And so, you know, I've got an unfair advantage. We have an unfair advantage. We know how the story ends.
Kind of like
we
our know where the story goes.
Having
learned from his mistakes.
Yeah. But nonetheless, you know, it's Yahweh's story telling through Abram. You'd think God would want to have this conversation with somebody who's a little more with it, who comes to understand a little more readily, because Abram didn't. And so you'd have to think, okay, so why did God pick a guy who's just not the sharpest tool in the shed?
There's a lot of us.
Yeah, I think
probably kind of like we talked about with Isaiah, lack of options in a lot of regards. You know, there was nobody else that was willing.
I think that's a huge part of it. No one else was willing, and so he went with the one willing person. I think that's huge. But I think the other reason is that Yahweh's story is, amazingly simple. Eludes the grasp of all but about 1 in 1 million people. And so what God is saying by choosing Abram is that the excuse that so many people give, you know, I don't have time to figure all this out, you know, I'm not as smart as maybe somebody else is. Yeah. And God is saying, hey, I did this with Abram.
I got time.
He's not smarter than you. If he can figure it out, you can figure it out. That's not an excuse.
I think that's one of the worst things that religion has done is it's convinced people that, you know, there's a quote-unquote Bible is so complex that unless you've had years of seminary study, you can never understand it. You need us to tell you how to read this.
Mm-hmm.
And you get so many people who just, they don't trust themselves. They think they have to have someone smarter than them tell them what it means.
Right. And so who was Abram's religious consultant and scholar?
Yahweh. Well, no, Yahweh's not even religious.
Yeah. The answer is no one.
Yeah, he's got no
background. He had no training. He had no expertise in any of this stuff. Hebrew wasn't even his birth language or his childhood language. He wasn't a Hebrew scholar. God speaking Hebrew to him. He had no religious training whatsoever. He had no linguistics training whatsoever. He had no exposure to modern science, which is so helpful to us. He figured it out. What's our excuse?
We are without.
No one has an excuse. It's that simple. So, but Abram responded and said, Yahweh, my upright one, my Edon, my upright pillar, the one who's standing up for me. What are you actually giving to me that has any ongoing value? For I go about childless, and the child who will inherit my household, he is Eliezer of Damascus. Oh man, dude, you're missing the point. God's not speaking about Eliezer. He is not speaking to you as if you were the father. He is speaking to you as the father, offering to adopt you as his son. You know, you missed the entire point. He is defending you. He is offering to pay the transit to get you from mortality to immortality. He is opening the door to his home for you. I'm making a big deal out of it. I'm here screaming into the phone. Why? Because there is no bigger deal. Because the same message was given to you, Kirk, to Terry, to you, JB, to Patty, to everyone who's listening. Yahweh was not talking to you about your children and what your children are going to inherit. He's offering this to you. He was offering this to Abram. And Abram skipped right over it and said, oh, it must be something material that I can will to my firstborn child. No, this is something profoundly spiritual that is directly for Abram and therefore directly to us.
Hey guys, I might have to drop out for a little bit. I need to go help put my daughter down, but I'll be back.
I can hear her in the background. That's one of the world's great jobs.
for sure.
Yeah, one of the world's
I'm
going to
go help put her down for the night, and
okay.
I'll be back.
All right. Yeah, enjoy.
Hi.
I love the sound of his daughter in the background. As, some people might think that's kind of a distraction, but it's one of my favorite sounds, so I happen to like it.
Yeah, we're talking about family.
Yeah, so, understand, Abram completely missed it. Now, that's okay, because, Kirk, you were in your, what, your 40s before you figured it out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was in my late 40s before I began to figure it out. Abram was 80, and he still, at this moment, he hadn't figured it out. Now, Damascus is interesting here. Will Yahweh accept somebody from Damascus?
No, and that includes our favorite whipping boy, Paul.
Yeah, Paul, on the road to Damascus.
The dirty word, no matter
what.
He
is telling you right here. Do you think that there was just random chance that Eliezer was from Damascus? Or do you think that maybe I'm telling you I ain't going to accept anything for Damascus?
I think
that includes, Paul's great conversion experience, the essence of Paul's calling as an apostle. Is he was on the road to Damascus.
That's a metaphor there.
No. Absolutely, unequivocally, no. This is prophetic. It's the ultimate crescendo.
Then you still head off to Damascus in that same area.
And then off to Arabia.
Yeah. Oh, he went to Arabia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what Damascus means in Hebrew?
There's a whole bunch of things, and it's,
first is to grow dumb, defined in various places as silenced and destroyed, judged in weeping, resulting in tears. Then from sackcloth to silky fine fabric, from being on the edge of a resting place to a couch or bed, even cut off and becoming dung.
Well,
there really is no part of that that works.
Has any appeal?
You know, I know in Islam the Allah's paradise is overstuffed couches and rivers that flow with wine and delectable foods and perpetual virgins. Well, that's not Yahweh's version of paradise. If you're reclined all day on your comfy sofa or bed, you're not engaged in this relationship, and these words are not for you. So there's no part of that definition that's good. So Abram just completely missed it. Every aspect of it, he blew. And I can't imagine a stronger point to make than God reaching out to someone and them not accepting his offer. Because they didn't understand it. That is a really powerful message. God didn't impose it. God didn't compel it. And this notion that God can have anything that he wants to save everyone. No, I'm sorry. God made a presentation. He told him what he was offering. He told him what he was expecting in return. And Abram didn't get it.
Was patient though. You have to.
So what does that mean? If Creator of the Universe is having a conversation with someone, now, Kirk, you've done a lot of study.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who God is and what He's offering, and how to present it better than God Himself?
Hardly.
So, when you reach out to someone and you reiterate Yahweh's offer. What are the likelihood that you are going to be successful in this when Yahweh himself was not?
Infinitesimal chance.
That's right. So, isn't Yahweh telling us, listen, most people are not going to want, they're not going to understand, and they're not going to want what I'm offering. It's just way too far from the norms of society. It is so different than what's being offered elsewhere. They're really, you need to know. Even when I make the presentation myself, the vast majority of people are not going to accept it. Yeah, we really had to work with Abram a lot of times before Abram finally began to get it, and it wasn't now. All right, so Abram said, hey, you know, that's all swell that you're going to pay the toll and open the door and serve as my my generous father and shepherd, and you're going to protect me. Hey, that's just great, but I just want you to know, I mean, and, you know, you're the creator God of the universe. You may not have figured this out, but I don't have a child, and all I got that's going to inherit what I have is this kid from Damascus. All right, well, that's a powerful message. Then Abram said, you know, sometimes you really need to know when to be quiet. Then Abram said, behold, you have given me, you have, behold. So then Abraham, behold, you have not given to me seed or offspring. So look, the child of my household must be my heir. You know, I had an opportunity to negotiate with Yahweh when there was nobody else willing to expose and condemn Islam. And therefore, I was the only choice because nobody else would. Nobody else wanted the job. So that being the case, I said, you know, I'm not sure I really want to do this either. And I negotiate with you. I will guarantee you that my response was, you got to do it my way. I mean. I've never been intimidated by Yahweh. He's never approached me. I've never seen anything in him that would intimidate anybody. I've always seen him as being very approachable and negotiable.
Very polite.
But this, you must telling him what he must do, that's going way too far. They wouldn't even think of that. And if God's going to say, I've got this plan, the last thing I want to do is try to tell him, you know, your plan really isn't all that good. You failed me up to this point. If that's your plan, I'm just not interested unless you do it my way. No, thank you. Now, how many people will tell you that children are a gift from God?
Just about everybody.
Yeah. This tells you they are not. You've not given me a child. Here, God picked out this guy. They're not giving me a child. If you want to know where children come from, you really need to go to sex education classes. Someone ought to tell you about the birds and the bees. Because I will tell you that 99.99999% of people that have children are godless. And that if God were in the business of giving children, it'd be about 1 in a million couples that would have children. And all of the rest would never have them. So don't think for a moment that a child is a gift from God. It is not true. So they were saying, hey, you haven't given me seed or offspring. So look, the child of my household must be the heir. Nah, it's not the way that God's going to play. I'm sorry. No to Damascus. Look up and pay attention. Hannah. Look up and pay attention. Behold, something important is being accentuated. Be observant at this time. Listen carefully to the insights being presented and emphasized. Notice the details in the statement. Consider the context, because surely what follows will change your perspective. The word, the Dabar of Yahweh, move closer to him, approaching to say, this suggestion and notion shall not be the recipient of your inheritance. On the contrary, and as a condition, the means to show the way to the beneficial relationship shall be brought forth from your inner being.
Mm-hmm.
He will be an inheritance for you. Wow. Okay. God said, you know, Abram. You haven't done a very good job of listening. That's really all I was expecting from you up to this point, is just listen and process what I'm saying. So let's just take a time out. Pause. You know, in the English vernacular. Get your shit together and pay attention.
No.
Okay. Now look up. Hannah, pay attention. What appeared to Abram? The arm of Yahweh? The face of Yahweh? The fire of Yahweh, the Lord, a human manifestation of Yahweh. What appeared to Abram?
The word.
Yeah, the bar.
Word.
The bar. Right. How does Yahweh appear to us?
Light.
Yeah.
We see him through the Torah.
Through the word.
Yeah, through his word. Through his word. So, the answer is, Yahweh appeared to Abram exactly the same way he appears to us, through his words. Did Abram have an advantage over us? No. Did we have an advantage over him? No.
Yes.
No.
I think we got four words.
We have four words.
Yes. We have the same approach.
Okay.
Yes.
We have the insight gleaned by others, such as Dode.
Yeah,
yes, we do. No, I would agree overall, but in terms of and I was ready to be more matter of fact here. Of course, we have lots of advantages that he doesn't have. But, you know, my point was really more matter of fact. It was the word of Yahweh that appeared to Abram. Yahweh appears to us as the word.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the same footing in this regard. So the word of Yahweh. Not of a generic God, not of Allah, not as Shiva, not as Jesus, not as Christ, not as the Lord. It's the word of Yahweh. If you don't know his name and you don't know where to look for his words, then quite simply, you don't know him and you are not going to approach. And he's not going to approach you. Move closer to him, approaching to say, this concept, this provision, this condition, this individual, the very idea being proposed from Zah. And there's no, I'm telling you, what God is basically saying, that's the dumbest idea I ever heard of. There is no aspect of what you just said that makes any sense to me. Not only no, absolutely no. No part of this is going to fly with me. What God is saying, I've got a plan. And we're going to do it according to my plan. And you don't get to revise my plan, O Christian New Testament.
Yeah.
Paul.
No. This suggestion and notion, man's concept, man's provision, man's way of speaking, man's proposal, Zaham, is rejected. Is repulsive, is loathsome, is despised, is disrespectful. Those are not good ideas when you're talking to God. So he's saying, this notion is repulsive to me. No, nothing's going to come. You are not going to come from Damascus and enter my home. You know, Paul claimed that he then was blind and dumb. You know, it's amazing. Anybody that Yosha met, if they were lame, he healed them so they could walk. If they were blind, he healed them so they could see.
Mm-hmm.
what happened to Paul? He was ambulatory and then he was made lame. He could see and he was blinded. Come on, people, figure it out. I mean, you can't have 3 billion people that stupid and you can't figure it out.
Well, just compare what we just read about how Abraham was approached by Yahweh to how Paul claimed to have been approached by him.
Yeah, well, he didn't.
Night and
Paul
day
never
different.
Claimed to be approached by Yahweh. He claimed to be approached by the Iusu Christu.
Christu.
And, of course, the Iusu Christu that approached him was the burning light of the sun, none other than Hasatan, Hillel ben Shakar. So this suggestion is repulsive. He shall not be the recipient of your inheritance. No, on the contrary, and as a condition, TM, by way of establishing the brand as a sign for what follows, the means to show the way to the beneficial relationship, Usher, the blessing encouraging you to pursue life the right way, which leads to a prosperous and fortuitous existence, shall be brought forth from your inner being, your ability to procreate, and your judgment. He will be an inheritance for you. The model of the covenant is of a man and woman coming together as husband and wife and conceiving a child such that they become a family of mother, father, and child. And they raise that child, protect that child, get on their knees to lift that child up, teach that child, nourish that child, teach that child, love that child. Yahweh is our heavenly Father. The set-apart spirit is our spiritual mother. We are Yahweh's children in the covenant family. As our father and mother, it's Yahweh's job and the set-apart spirit's job, which is part of Yahweh, to love us, to get down on their knees, to lift us up, to nourish us, to protect us, to provide a home for us. And so Yahweh is saying, the way we're going to do this is that you're going to father a child. And you better pay attention, because not only are you going to father a child, but you know it's going to be with your wife. It's going to be of a man and woman coming together because they love each other, becoming mother and father, and creating and then raising a family. Yeah, I was saying, that's the way I'm going to do it, because I want your human experience to model the covenant eternal family, because if you, as a parent, come to understand what family is all about, you're going to come understand what I'm offering. It's really important. So this was a condition. It was a means to show the way to the beneficial relationship, to bring it forth so we would understand it. And by the way, the inheritance was for of this child was for Abram. I'm gonna give this. You know, God's not saying that your child is going to be my inheritance. God didn't say anything other than this child is going to be, you know, a blessing to you.
Mm-hmm.
Marvelous statement again, Kirk. You got anything you want to add to that?
No, I was just thinking about this whole thing. Two things came to mind while you were discussing it, and the first one was it struck me as why Ra is always translated as evil, because it's man's view, man with his two eyes, you know, it's the Rosh and the double Ain perspective. Yeah, perspective is always rotten. And he told him, I'm not going to look at your view. It's not your approach. I've got my approach. And then I thought, again, he's going to have to repeat this again with him, have a very similar argument when he's has this child Ishmael with his Egyptian maiden servant. You know, when he says, well, can't we just have the covenant with this one? And once again, he says, no.
It's no.
Yours and Sarah's. And Sarah, obviously, vitally important. And that's why we have this.
Yeah, we're not going to have the child of a slave woman. Because a slave woman. There is no free will in that. And we're not going to do it apart from marriage, because the whole concept we're dealing with here is based on marriage. The covenant. In fact, the word Bereth for covenant, it happens to be the same as the Hebrew word for marriage and marriage vow. So we're going to do it that way, because while very few people understand this, the concept is really simple, and it's manifest in human nature.
Yeah.
All right, so then we read. So he took him with him, place, and he said, please, observe and choose to consider the heavens and the spiritual realm, and accurately relate of your own free will, and make a declaration regarding the light of the stars and heavenly powers. If you're able to actually comprehend, genuinely understand, and thereby endure forever. By accounting for and quantifying these things and that which is associated with them in a written document. And then he made a promise to him, your extended family will actually and exist in this manner and place. We read next in JB, we read next that that Abram finally got it. But I don't think there's 1 in 1 million people today who get it from these words. Because there's this crazy idea that, and the mistranslation of the whole thing, that, you know, the Lord took Abram out to a little promenade, and they looked over the land, and, you know, then God said, you know, as expansive as all this is, you know, I want you to look there and you see the stars up in the sky. That's how many descendants are going to come from you. Okay. It's just stupid. First of all, do you have any idea how many stars there are in the... all right, let's just start with galaxies, like the Milky Way. Do you know how many galaxies there are in the universe?
Billions.
Billions?
Yeah, about 400 billion is our best guess. About 400
billion.
400 billion. You know the number of stars in the average galaxy?
Hundreds of billions.
Trillions, maybe?
About 100 billion is the average number of stars per galaxy. A galaxy the size of the Milky Way has between 400 and 450 billion stars in it. But so the average number of stars per galaxy is 100 billion, and there are 400 billion galaxies.
Oh, a big multiple.
Now, if you were to count every person that's ever lived, not just descendants of Abraham, do you even...
You couldn't reach that number.
No.
No.
Okay, if you get to visible stars in the sky, it is so much greater than the number of people. So, God's not talking about that. What he's saying instead is, all right, pay attention now. I want you to closely examine and consider. This is not Shamar, but instead the bot. Look at, gaze upon, of your own free will ponder. Use your perception of sight to examine and think about. Determined to interpret and understand, thereby responding appropriately. It's a powerful word, Nabat. The heavens and the spiritual realm. He took him out to see the universe and the stars within it as well as the abode of God. Now, I want you, that he says, to accurately relate to all of this. With your own free will, then make a declaration regarding what you observe. And what you're going to see is the light of the stars and the heavenly powers. And what I'm telling you is that if you can comprehend what you're seeing and genuinely understand this correlation between the light and the stars, you're going to endure forever. You're going to be just like the light from those stars, and you're going to become perfect and immortal, existing forever. That's what I'm showing you. That's what I'm offering you. I am hereby telling you that I will transform you into light, and that heaven is about being a spiritual, energy-based being. No bodily resurrection here. That's stupid. But you're going to be just like the light of those stars, powerful, enlightened, brilliant, perfect, immortal. That's what I'm offering you. if you're able to comprehend it. And quantifying these things, which are associated in a written document, La Kafar, approaching in conjunction with a proper assessment of them, recounting and corresponding to the message in writing, to announce, proclaim, and enumerate the relationship between these things. Now, these are thinking words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Yahweh took Abram to heaven, the spiritual realm, and throughout the universe of billions, hundreds of billions of galaxies, each with hundreds of billions of stars, and said, this is what I'm offering you. But isn't he doing the same thing for us with these words?
Yes.
Yeah. Yahweh's offer is through all of us.
Right. And if he's offering exactly the same thing to us, he's giving us a tour of heaven and the stars, saying, this is what's important here. Make the connection. He's giving us the exact same tour he gave to Abram.
Well, let me ask you, no one concludes this.
No.
You hear it here. No one concluded this, that that's what he's talking about in these pictures. I mean, you go through 1,000 sermons, 1,000 whatevers, and rabbinical writings, I guess, as well. And no one concludes that. But but it's so obvious once it's pointed out to you. And I'm not saying that I got it first. I got it here too. But once you realize that he's asking you to be like him, and that how many times has he used the metaphor of light to describe him and what he is like, and we're going to be like him, kin to him.
You know, Kirk, there was
it can only be that, right?
In our group, at least, several hundred people that correspond together and communicate together.
Yes.
There didn't seem to be any pushback of any kind when it became obvious that observation for our time was the neck, the sign that Yahweh was lifting up. And I think the realization was that there's no other place, not in the last 2,500 years, where these thoughts have been assessed and pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
So, the reason that Yahweh has chosen this is that he's created a presentation that includes his insights. Now, where do these insights come from? Sure as heck didn't come from me.
No.
They were right there. They were there in his words for the taking.
Yeah, waiting for somebody to take them out.
Just looked at his words.
Yeah.
And said, oh, that's what this means.
Well, what else could it mean? I mean, if you were trying to argue it, I don't know where it would go. I mean, the other doesn't hold water.
Yeah. You know, one is ridiculous, it's absolutely untrue, and not only is it untrue, what's the value of it? Do you think that any human being would ever care that after they were dead and gone, that their child, and you know, he had one that counted, that their child got married and that they had a couple of kids, one of which was discarded and hated, but the other one became had all sorts of different female companions, and ended up with 12 kids, and then those 12 kids ended up having more children. Long after Abram is taking a dirt nap. Yeah, he's actually in heaven with you. Do you think it matters?
Not to him.
No, and beyond that, think for a moment. You know, the descendants through Ishmael, they are from Yahweh's own prophetic testimony. They're wild asses of men whose hands are raised against their brothers and who live in hostility with the whole world. Would you celebrate that? Would you say, oh, my God, where did I go wrong? Look, I created jihadists. They came from my loins, jihadists, satanic Muslims. terrorists, pedophiles, rapists. No, there's no sense of satisfaction there. Or even think about Yisrael. Yes, Yahweh loves Yisrael. But can you imagine a people that have squandered what Yahweh has offered to a greater extent than Yisrael?
No.
So
truly not.
There is absolutely no advantage whatsoever to Abram to based upon what the English Bibles present as a rendering of this verse. In fact, it would be a source of pain. And it's technically, literally untrue. That's not the number of descendants he had. So, why not give God some credit? And think about who he is and what he's offering. And if you come to know that he is light, that light is immortal, that light is empowering. You understand the transition between E equals MC squared, and this correlation between the light of the stars and the spiritual existence in the seventh dimension in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Once you put those things together and that the entire universe is being given to us and that we ourselves are being transformed into light, now something which makes no sense any other way is brilliantly insightful.
Totally agree. What an offer.
And, yeah, what an offer. And, Kirk, you looked at this. Was any part of this difficult?
No. I mean, because you have to look beyond the first lookup on a word, and then sure, JB agrees with me on this. By the time you get you found it here, you go, wow, that paints the picture that you just can't miss now.
Right. Like Shamayim.
Yeah.
Shamayim is both the universe and the abode of God. Well, both mm-hmm. apply here.
Yes.
Both apply. They're related concepts here. Kafar. Oh, yes, kafar means to count. It means to relate to. It means to accurately take a census of. But it also, kafar also means to provide documented proof, which is what Yahweh was doing, of an agreement, to enumerate something, to verify something, so that it can be understood, so you can relate to it. You know,
mm-hmm.
you can't shortchange kafar here. And Kokob is the light of the stars, but also of heavenly powers. It conveys what it would be like to exist as light, to be illustrious. It speaks of spiritual empowerment, to value the significance and the glorious nature of the light that runs throughout the universe. And it's from Kabod. Kokob is from Kabod, which is to revere, to honor, to glorify, and dignify. So, yes, there's nothing hard about this, but you do have to look beneath the surface. And then you're cold. And you're cold describes the effort that's required. The effort is manifest in the word Yakol. Take the time so that you're able to comprehend. It's important that you genuinely understand, because if you genuinely understand and comprehend what I'm offering here and capitalize on it, you're going to endure forever. If you're capable of recognizing the meaning of this information, then you're going to be empowered. You're going to accomplish something that's vitally important. You're going to overcome all adversarial factors. If you call, then ultimately you're going to not only experience something that is extraordinary, all possibility of failure is going to be eliminated. Boldly embody an attitude of absolute confidence. You know, sometimes I'm put in a position where I'm talking to somebody that I've not met before, but you're put into a constraint of time where you have very little time. You're trying to accomplish a lot in a very little time. And I know that I'm in those circumstances, like I am 10 fire hoses coming at somebody all at one time. And because I have absolutely no doubt, absolute, total and complete confidence in Yahweh and his testimony. It's just got to be really tough for somebody to take, disorienting. But that's what Yahweh's word does to us.
Yeah. Well, I've been there and done that.
Oh, yeah. It's not belief. It's not, you're not trying to get someone to agree with you because, you know, you need the somebody, this whole concept of faith. If somebody else agrees, well, you know, they help to validate my belief. No, I don't care. I'm not looking for you to validate what I know to be true. I don't care if you accept it or not. I know it to be true. I'm going to present it from a point of view of utter and complete confidence.
Yeah.
There's no doubt whatsoever. And nothing you're going to say is going to change that.
It's not about convincing them. It's about educating them.
Well, it's just for your information if you want to, if you're interested.
Yeah, here it is.
Here it
is. That's what God was laid out. Here it is, Abram. I'm going to tell you what I'm offering you as an inheritance can be seen by touring heaven and equating it to the light of stars. But only if you're capable of comprehending.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I just thought a lot about this week about this passage, and it presents Yahweh. Two things happened. One, I went to a demonstration, artist demonstration, and this woman was talking about how she paints at the big Presbyterian church, and she was telling where they got 5,000 people in four periods over the course of every Sunday. And I drew a little line down in the thing, and you know, and what's presented here is Yahweh being provable through prophecy, obviously, and he is a kind fellow. He's very polite. All the times you've translated please, and I looked them all up, and that's right. He's presented as he expects very little of us, that he wants us to be enlightened. He gives us all this stuff for free. He doesn't want any of our money. He wants our relationship. And then you draw that down to you've got Lord on this side, who wants your money, can't live without your money. You have to support his priest. You have to, and he diminishes you because you have to bow down and cower in fear.
Right.
You have to have faith because it's the only way you can accept something that's illogical. Yahweh's a defender. He's a judge and jury. How many of us were scared to death on an airplane coming if we had turbulence where we say, oh, gosh, don't forgive me, Jesus.
Yeah. Just think for a moment. We mentioned Billy Graham at the beginning of the program. When he would call people forward and have them close their eyes and bow down, who were they bowing down before?
For him.
Him.
Yeah, Billy Lord. And Billy Graham.
Billy Graham.
Yeah.
He's forward and bow down. They're bowing down before Billy Graham. He's the one standing up there on that big podium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, God's just the opposite. I'm doing this for you. I'm going to lift you up such that you're equivalent to the light of the stars. E equals MC squared. Think of that. This energy that I'm offering you is the equivalent of matter times the speed of light squared. And that's just the beginning.
Yeah. But the tragedy, it only draws a few hundred of us worldwide.
Worldwide.
And they got thousands in this little town here just flocking to him, to Satan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Satan.
Something at the wall.
That's what, you know, we've studied the nature of the Assyrian and the Babylonian, the whore of Babylon, of Hillel ben Shakar.
Yeah.
And he made it really clear. He says, they all capitulate. Nobody even lifts a finger to stop me.
Yeah.
I sit there and I rob their nest, their children. They all bow down to me. They all surrender to me. No one even lifts a finger to fight me. Yeah. Well, that's true. That's what he's been able to do. So, kafar is one of those words of it's written document because Yahweh's written testimony is the equivalent of light. And coming to quantifying these things which are associated, making the connections so that you understand. And then he made a promise to him by saying to him, your extended family, your Zera, your seed, your descendants, your offspring, your prodigy, will actually exist forever in this manner. Well, he's not saying here, this is the number of descendants you're going to have. He says, no, the descendants of the covenant, those who capitalize on this relationship that I'm creating through you. So the descendants of the covenant, the offspring of the covenant, are going to exist this way forever. It has nothing to do with the quantity of them. It has to do with what Yahweh does relative to the quality of them. We're going to exist forever as light. We're going to exist forever with access to Yahweh's home as a spiritual being. So the extended covenant family will actually and forever exist in this manner and in this place, in the manner of light, in the place that is Yahweh's home. So it takes something that is, in English Bibles, is untrue and counterproductive, and by considering it literally in an amplified fashion, it presents something that is as profound as any words that have ever been uttered. Now, let's just say for a moment that Yahweh was wrong about the number of stars that you could see and the number of descendants Abraham was going to have, that Yahweh was wrong about the idea that them having a lot of descendants was somehow a blessing rather than a curse. Let's just pretend all of that was the case. What's the value of telling us about it all of these years later? Right. Absolutely not. So the only reason for telling this story is so that we can choose to be part of the covenant. I mean, that is, there's no other reason. That's the reason we're being told this story.
And it just blows, and everybody blows past it.
Wow. And they all blow past it. Why do they do that?
Don't care.
No.
Not interested.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it was so amazing, too. There was, and I didn't make a big deal out of it, but there was a na in the midst of this. Na is the most amazing word ever to be attributed to God. You know what na means?
No.
Please.
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 Yes. Well, yes, I do.
I'm asking you. Yeah, please.
Yeah, that's what I mean when you said how polite he is, I was referring to.
Yeah,
I mean,
please.
No, I was in there.
You know, and you know, what language would have so many words for observe? Ra'ah, Shamar, Nabat. And there's many others.
Yeah.
But, so why not look at the nuances associated with Nabat that aren't in the primary words, for example, Ra'ah, to see, or Shamar, to observe? So, yes, Nabat means to observe and choose to consider when it's written in the imperative.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something more to it. Use your perception of sight to think about, determine to interpret and understand, thereby respond appropriately to what you're saying. And if you simply ignore that, then why would Yahweh have four words for the concept of observe if they didn't have a nuance, a shading of their own that is somehow important?
Indeed.
So isn't it our responsibility to figure out, well, what is it about Nabat that would cause him to use it here versus Shamar? I think that he's telling you better figure it out. Otherwise, I wouldn't have so many words for observe. What's the primary difference between Shamar and Nabat? Shamar is just strictly, closely examine it carefully, consider, focus on this. Tamar does not have the connotation with it of it's implied, but it's not there, of comprehend, understand. And there is no connotation of so that you can respond appropriately with Shamar. Well, here he wants the full McGillicuddy man. Observe for a purpose. Observe so that you understand, and understand so that you can respond. Because this access to Yah is home in heaven, and the ability to be transformed into light doesn't have any value for Abraham or for us unless you understand what's being offered and respond to it appropriately. That's why the Ramana is used.
Yeah. He's making it tougher, so obviously the answer to my question, or rhetorical that it was, is they don't understand it because you have to. He wants people that are all on board correctly and understand deeply what this is about and accept the terms and conditions. Otherwise, you'd have empowered people that would just ruin it. It always comes back
correct.
To that, doesn't it? Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, precisely. And Kirk, it's hard, and JB, it's hard for me to put myself in the position of this is difficult to understand. Because I didn't find it difficult to understand. I found it time-consuming, but the time was the most enjoyable thing that I could imagine doing. And if you just approached it with an open mind, if you came to like Yahweh and enjoy his company, if you just came to appreciate his perspective as father and offering to adopt us into his family, this notion of the physical body is matter which deteriorates, and he's offering to transform us into light so that we become more like him, and that the spiritual realm is all about being a being comprised of light. When you have that perspective, I don't think any of this is hard. I mean, it's just so straightforward.
Yeah.
So I don't know why it is that the last 2,500 years have transpired, and if there's somebody that has figured it out, no one has.
Published it.
Shared it in a meaningful way. Right. And I want to tell you, okay, let's just say that coming to the proper perspective so that you can make these connections and gain this understanding is difficult initially unless someone holds your hand at least part of the way there and provides some help. Well, okay, that help's now available.
Yeah.
So really, there is no excuse anymore.
No. Can you put the desire
in? That's the reason Yahweh's lifting up the sign.
No.
And Yahweh wants to go one step beyond there is no more excuse. He wants to make it such that if you're willing to invest the time, if you have an open mind, if you genuinely want to know him, if you like the idea of knowing and understanding, if you appreciate why it's important to exercise good judgment, if you like the God that you come to know and you want to be part of his family, there is no barrier to any of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all available to you. It's all straightforward. All you have to do is take the time to understand it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the purpose of every bit of this. And, of course, in this particular statement, this is one of my favorite statements. So, we've spent a lot of time on it. But one of the things that it also affirms is that the path to God isn't through faith. The path to God isn't being good. The path to God isn't through prayer. The path to God isn't through a confession of belief. The path to God isn't going to a mosque, a shrine, a temple, a synagogue, or a church. The path to God always has been, always will be, cerebral. examining the words, making the proper connections so as to understand the message, and then responding to what you've come to know. That has always been and will always be the path to God. We think our way to God. No. Every animal, small and large, has a brain. For their body mass, man's is by far the largest, by far the most complex, and the only brain capable of a very complex language. That's not by accident. We were specifically created to be able to observe and understand and then respond to these words. But it is only by observing, understanding, and responding to these words that we can have a relationship with Yahweh. There is no other way. Not by your donations. It's not by your good deeds. It's not by your church affiliation. Those things have no merit whatsoever with God. None. So it is all through understanding. That is what makes Dode, who wrote, taught us how to understand Yahweh's Torah, makes him the most important person who ever lived. Well, we're still recording, but we're done with the broadcast phase of the program. I think we've reached a really good spot to
seems like a good stopping point to me.
Yes. So we'll start up here again a week from tonight. I just love this stuff. I mean, I just can't imagine anything being better than the stuff we're covering right now.
I'm in awe
of it. Yeah, it's the essence of who God is and what he's offering and how we engage in a relationship with him. What could be more important?
Nothing on this planet.
No. Why would you read the rubbish that Paul wrote if you can study the conversations that Yahweh had with Abram? I mean, that's one of the things that's so amazing. Why would you do that?
Where are you going to get more from? Yahweh's word or but I, Paul, say?
Seems self-evident, doesn't it?
I'll listen to Yahweh. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll listen to Yahweh. Yes. If Yahweh and Paul disagree, and they disagree on everything, who would you trust? This isn't this. There's no part of this that's hard. You know, think. Has there been any mention of a church, a New Testament, a gospel of grace, Paul's letters, being good,
nope,
donations, prayer, getting on your knees, nothing.
Nope. Observe. You said it started with, be in awe, don't be afraid.
Right. Observe, think, understand, and respond.
Mm-hmm.
Observe, think, understand, respond.
Actually, you should assume that'll never come up in a church.
No, there isn't a church on this planet that even is aware of there's a Hebrew word in the Psalm, which of course is conscience, the ability to discern right from wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and observations for our time. This particular passage, I must have devoted like 10 pages to it, because after we went through it, I thought it was just so profound. We went back and every little subsection of this, you know, I'm looking at the chapter now. This is one of those things that to the largest degree possible, if it was, not just a microscope, but a telescope. I want you to see every nuance of this and think and let it wash all over your soul. Yeah. This is one of those really profound statements from God. Yeah. All right, fellas, good night.
All right, gentlemen,
same
I appreciate
time,
it.
Same place.
Same place.
Yeah. Best to you guys.
All right.
Happy shot.
Bye, y'all.
Good night.
You too.